So as many of you know, I grew up in Northern California in the San Francisco Bay Area. And not only did I grow up there, but so did the preceding generations of my family, so that I was the fifth generation of my family to live in California. Now, I tell you this not to boast, although if I was living in California, that would be boasting, because there really aren't that many of us, but rather to give you some context. Because although I had seen snow, and I had been in snow before moving to upstate New York, I really had no understanding of what winter, really deep winter, is. You see, my childhood winters were full of rain, back when it used to rain in California. The road I lived on flooded out every December. It did drop down to freezing every once in a while, but not often. Now, the days were shorter in wintertime, but not quite as short as they are here. I did a little research on this in prep for the sermon. On the winter solstice in my hometown, the day is 1/2 hour longer than it is here. And that doesn't seem like much, but we all have the experience of knowing how dark the midwinter is here. It's not uncommon for any of us to leave for work in the dark, or at least at sunrise, and to return home from work also in the dark or at sunset. There is a little hope in the statistics, though, because at the summer solstice, our day is 1/2 hour longer than my hometown in California. So we do make it up a little bit. We're known here in central New York to grumble and grouse about the weather, because who wouldn't? It's human nature. But we are made of tough stock, and somehow we find our way through. Each of us has our own way of kind of getting through this winter in central New York. Some of us hunker down and do a sort of modified hibernating. We watch more TV. We go to bed earlier. The alarm doesn't quite wake us up as early in the morning. Some of us throw ourselves into it. We ski or sled or ice skate or snowshoe. Some of us simply increase our antidepressants. All of those are good and practical ways of getting through the winter. But they are just that, getting through the winter. I want to suggest something different. I want to reach back and draw from the wisdom of our ancestors about how to make this winter, or any winter, a little bit better. How do we make room for the mystery, even in the deepest of winter? In a book entitled All Creation Waits, An Advent Mystery for New Beginnings by Gail Boss, the author points to the pre-Christian roots of the season of Advent. She writes, "I learned that the roots of Advent run deep beneath the Christian church, in the earth and its seasons. Late autumn in the Northern Hemisphere brings the end of the growing season, when early agricultural peoples had harvested their crops and stacked their food in their larders. They gave a collective sigh of relief. Their long days in the fields were over. For their labor, they had heaps of fruits and vegetables and grains and meats. And the group body called out, 'Feast!' At the same time, no matter how glad the party, they couldn't keep from glancing at the sky. Their growing season was over because the sun had retreated too far south to keep the crops alive. Each day throughout the fall, they watched the light dwindle, felt the warmth weakened. It made them anxious and edgy." I think we've all can relate to that. "Their fires were no substitute for the sun. When they had eaten up the crop they were feasting on, how would another crop grow? Throughout December, as the sun sank and sank to its lowest point on their horizon, they felt the shadow of primal fear, fear for survival crouching over them. They were feasting and they were fearful, both. Yes, last year the sun had returned to their sky, but what if this year it didn't? Despite their collective memory, people wedded bodily to the earth couldn't help asking the question. Their bodies in the present tense asked the question. And you know, most cultures that have a winter have some kind of a midwinter holiday, even though it may not be in December, because Australia's winter solstice is June 21st. On the opposite side of the globe, their seasons are reversed from ours. So one of the things I realized in reading Voss's book is that we can look at winter as this time to be struggled with and suffered through, or we can take a lesson from our ancestors. When the harvest is over, when the food has been put up and stored in the cellar, when the winter wood has been stacked, the long work days of summer are over. Yes, the days are shorter, but there is less work. These long nights of winter and short days means that it is a time of rest. And our bodies know this. Some of our tiredness, some of our seasonal sadness, is, I think, our body's way of saying it is time to rest. We are the only animal silly enough to invent the electric light bulb and think that that will solve the problem of winter. We can view winter as a problem to be solved, or we can view it as a time to reconnect with ourselves and with the divine. Now, our American culture tells us that this is a time for parties and eating and drinking and sugar galore. Conservative Christians will tell you that Jesus is the reason for the season, which good capitalists know is wrong. The economy is the reason for the season. At least if you look at all the circulars that come in your mail and see the advertisements on television. But our ancestors knew differently. They knew this season was about survival and the mysterious ways that life moves forward. Gail Boss goes on to write, "To be sure, some part of the holiday season is a celebration of the harvest, for us as it was for our ancestors. Even if our personal harvest doesn't involve crops and barns." We throw a party to mark the end of another year and all that it has brought. We do this in a big, bright, loud way. But for us also, as for our ancestors, the dark end of the year brings unrest. It is an end. It comes with our asking and makes plain how little of life's course we control. This uncertainty we don't know how to mark, and so it marks us. We feel weighted and gloomy, and we feel guilty because voices everywhere in myriad of ways sing out, "It's the most wonderful time of the year." The church history book that got hold of me, Gail goes on to say, told me that my own annual December sadness was no reason for guilt. It was a sign of being wide awake in the world, awake enough to sense loss. And furthermore, there was a way to engage that sadness, and that was Advent. The early fathers of the Christian church read the ebbing of the light and heat and vegetable life each year as a foreshadowing of the time when life as we know it will end completely. That it will end is the rock bottom truth we sense deep in our primal bones every December, and it rightly terrifies us. To there in our abiding fear of a dark ending, the church spoke of an adventus, a coming. Faith proclaimed when life as we know it goes, this year and at the end of all years, one comes and comes bringing a new beginning. Now, not all of us are Christian, and not all of us recognize this practice of Advent, and I'm not saying that you should take up a practice that does not necessarily fit your faith. But what I am saying is that our ancestors had some wisdom. Winter, as sad-making as it is, provides us with a pause. Advent to the church fathers was the right naming of the season when light and life are fading. They urged the faithful to set aside 4 weeks to fast, to give, to pray, always to strip down, to let the bared soul recall what it knows beneath its fear of the dark. For you see, originally Advent was not a time of festivity. It was a time of preparation and paring down, of time and space made to reflect on the divine. I also suspect there's something incredibly practical about that. If you have stored away all your food for the winter and there is a definite finite amount of food, and you spend 4 weeks fasting, it will stretch that food even further. I know, and you know, and our ancestors knew, that there is a mystery in this world. Some of it is simply that which we don't know yet or understand yet, but much of it is a divine mystery. The ebb and flow of the seasons, the divine push to affirm life at every turn, no matter what, the divine love that courses through this creation and cannot be stopped. No matter what we do, we cannot stop that love, and that is a divine mystery that is important to open ourselves up to at this time of year. When you get into a mindset that winter is something to be struggled through, you lose an opportunity. When you take your lead from nature and use winter as a pause, you can get proximal to the divine. Winter provides us a natural space for sitting with the mystery of the universe. So if you find yourself with lower energy and a lower mood, if you can, don't spend a lot of time in your head berating yourself for not feeling cheerier. I would say that you are really experiencing some spiritual depth. Your body is telling you to slow down. So I would encourage you to curl up under that comforter. Grab the hot beverage, but don't turn the TV on. Spend some time pondering the snow. Try to remember what it was like if you had a childhood in snow, when it was fun. Look at the beauty of it. Just slow down to take a look at the beauty of it. It exquisitely outlines each tree branch. Or those last three leaves that never fall, right? They're always outlined by the snow. If you have a bit of yard or land around your house or where you live, look for tracks of animals. Every winter, I am astounded at the number of bunny prints in my backyard. In the summer, I have no knowledge that they hop through my yard, but in the winter, I see every record of it. This is the time of year to slow down. Let your heart ponder what this turning of the seasons mean. We who believe we can control so much. At this time of year, we come face to face with how much we cannot control. My relatives in California get faced with this through earthquakes and fires and droughts. Horrible, horrible, unpredictable disasters. We get to practice this every year in a way that is somewhat predictable and slower and more forgiving, and there is grace in that. Every so often here in Central New York, some things coincide: a clear sky, a snow-covered ground, and a full moon. The moonlight will light up the snow in the most beautiful of ways. I believe the next full moon is on December 22nd. If the clouds part, enjoy the moonlight that night. And you won't even have to stay up that late to see it. Spend your longest night and your shortest day pondering how this past year went for you and how you might like to see the new year dawn. What will you do with all that sunlight come this June? Spend some time reflecting on the gifts you have received in this life, not just the gifts you will be giving. Make a list of gratitudes and look at it when the snow and the gray seem too deep. We really don't need to make room for the mystery because it is around us and within us all the time. We, and by we, honestly, I think I probably mean me, need to slow down and take a breath look around, and appreciate the mystery in all of its manifestations. In a world without end, may this be so.